This is Richards 1-4 here on TSN 1050. Let's see, do the math. Richards 1-4. It's 3 now. We have an hour before we turn things over to the guys at Overdrive, and they've got a little nice lead into the weekend as well, because their shift, usually 3 hours, is 2 hours tonight, because at 6 o'clock we will have live Olympic women's soccer, Canada versus France quarterfinal action. And all of a sudden, that game became a little, if not a lot, more interesting, because the American women's team exits the Olympics in the earliest point of the Olympics ever. Quarterfinals gone.
Dusted.
Nice. Don't we always cheer against them? Isn't that what Canadians do? We love them. They're our buddies. They are our comrades in arms. They are our greatest trade partner on the planet. Yeah, boy, do we want to beat Big Brother, right?
Sure we do. Absolutely. So especially in the Olympics, because they got so much gold all the time.
And they have a few more people to choose from than we do.
A couple.
And we know that they have the superstars on the American team. Hope Solo, obviously, the biggest name, and she's been able to take her fame and parlay it into bigger and better things. Even like she did Dancing with the Stars, right?
Yeah.
So she's been able to make a name for herself outside of the soccer world. But I thought it was hilarious in the postgame, trying to freeze the kicker, if you want to use the football term, by changing gloves before the final kick. And the Swedish player is laughing at her for doing that.
Wow. Nice.
Nice.
Nice, nice.
It is not going to be a fun weekend, though, because let's face it, of the teams south of the border, there are a few that resonate more than others.
Mm-hmm.
And there are so many women who play soccer in the United States who are looking for those role models.
Yep.
There is such a higher profile for that team than certainly the women's hockey team in
Absolutely.
The States. And probably more so than the Olympic basketball team who's playing Canada right now on TSN.
I would
TSN.
Say, yeah. I mean, probably the most popular female sport there is in America,
is
right?
Soccer, and
yeah.
That's the big team, and they're
yeah.
very successful, and were favorites to win the gold again.
I mean, they're again. All Hope Solo and Alex Morgan. They make tons of money.
And she missed her. She missed her kick. She had
yeah.
the first penalty kick, and she missed hers. So it will be a long weekend for soccer fans south of the border.
They're getting their dolled up down there. Check it out, Hoagie. Field's looking pretty sweet.
Yeah, we should mention we're at yeah. BMO Field. We've got the Argo game, which will immediately follow women's soccer today. So we'll get in maybe midway through the first quarter, maybe
yeah.
a little bit later. If you want to listen to the game, you can start streaming it on tsn1050.ca. But, this is your first game. Are you excited?
I am. Very excited.
It is neat because there is a different vibe. I know it's just an empty stadium right now. Mm-hmm. They're kind of putting some of the finishing touches on the stadium to get it ready. You were kind of taken aback when they let one of the fireworks off.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
you also noted to me how much, like, because I know more about NFL football than CFL
sure.
football, but
yep.
I'm a fan of CFL football, but the size of the field blows me away. The
okay.
fact how much bigger it is than an NFL field is unbelievable.
I know this isn't going to work on radio, but I'll explain it.
You can see it with the grass in
momentarily.
Front of us. Makes it more obvious.
See where the shadows are now? Where
the
you can
shadows
see?
That are creeping up to the hash marks? Of
yes.
The 2010s.
That's basically an yeah. American field width.
Yeah.
So you got about 15 more yards wide in a Canadian field. And then when you look at an American field, it's 100 yards plus 10 yards on each end zone. So it's 120 yards total.
Yeah.
Up here, you get 110 yards. 55-yard line, so
yeah.
you've got 110 between the goalposts, and each end zone is 20 yards, so you've got 150 yards, so it's 30 yards longer and about 15 yards wider.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot more square footage to cover up here, and the hash marks are further apart up here as well. They're on the goalposts, lined up like parallel to the goalposts in the NFL. Up here, they're outside the goalposts. So for American quarterbacks who come up here, and they are during their first camp,
mm-hmm.
and they try to throw a pass from the far hash mark to the near sideline,
yeah.
a throw that south of the border is about 30 yards. Up here, the ball seems to sail forever
mm-hmm.
up here. It's about 10 yards further to make that throw, and it throws a lot of quarterbacks.
I could see it, like somebody thinking they're a big stud coming up here, not realizing that, and go, oh, I got a few, 20 extra yards to go here.
It is amazing that there have been so many Heisman winners, Heisman finalists, guys who have had a decent run in the NFL who have come up here and just crapped the bed.
Really?
And there are guys that you look and say, oh, man, that guy's perfect for this league. I can't wait to get this NCAA stud up here.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, No. Like Blake Sims, who played at Alabama a couple years ago, national championship, and he came up here last year with the Argos, and I honestly don't think I've seen a quarterback perform worse in a training camp. And they cut him before camp ended. Like, they took a look at him, and after the inter-squad game, just said, no, this isn't going to work. Mm-hmm. Saskatchewan picks him up. They've gone through injury problems out there. He still can't dress. He's like the number five quarterback out there. And the majority of fans in this market particularly, where there's not a huge affinity for the Canadian Football League in a lot of circles, and there are a lot of people who undersell how good the players are in this league, would figure a guy would come up running Alabama and come up here and just light the league on fire, and it's not the case.
No. There's a lot of things to deal with.
You know, Kenny Shaw's another example, a guy who was Jameis Winston's number one target at Florida State, one of the top receivers in the program's history. Couldn't get a sniff up here last year. Couldn't get on the field. And now he's getting a chance to play. He's learned the game. He's learned the waggle, the timing. He's learned all of the nuances of the CFL game. And now he's making a mark up here. But he couldn't get on the field last year. It's
crazy.
It not everybody can star in the NCAA and come up here. Those are boys. These are men in a lot of cases. So I wonder
what players that come from NCAA don't know anything about even Canada.
And a lot of that.
And then all of a sudden they go to a game in Regina and they see the mayhem, the actual fandom.
But they all say it's...
That must be interesting.
They say it's like a college game. And that's what it's like in Regina, because the entire province gets into it. And they have green days out there on game day.
Yeah.
Where they encourage everybody, every citizen of the province, to wear Rider paraphernalia, or if you don't have Rider stuff, at least wear green. Mm-hmm. And if you walk around downtown Regina on a game day, it is insane. Like, 90% of the people are wearing green. If it's not logoed, you know, golf shirt, T-shirt, hat, jersey, whatever it is, they've got it on.
That's reminiscent of smaller American cities when it comes to college football.
Yes, and
they get right into.
That's what I'm hoping that at some point it captures
connect.
Here.
Yeah.
Anybody who came to the opening night had fun. There's zero question about that.
Yeah.
And there were 24,000 in here, and it may as well have been 80,000 because it was loud. People were having a great time. The game itself didn't live up, sadly, from an Argo perspective to the hype. But the last couple of games, the offense looks like it's going. Kilgore played great last game. But, it shouldn't be a problem to draw 20,000 people a night with the popularity of football in this or on this continent right now.
For sure.
When you look at other markets in the States, and the attitude here, and this is a market unlike any other in North America, because south of the border, people will go to a high school game on a Friday night, and they'll take it for what it is.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not the NCAA, but I love it.
Yep.
And then on Saturday, let's say we're talking about Michigan. They'll go to a high school game on the Friday night. Saturday, they're out at Michigan or Michigan State or Northern Michigan or Eastern Michigan.
Yeah.
They're going to their alma mater or their hometown team, and they're digging the game. They're having fun. They're taking it for what it is, and they're going, oh, it's not the NFL, but I'm having fun.
They're having fun.
And then they go to the Lions game on Sunday. Like, you can do that. And it seems in this market, there is sniping between fans of teams. Oh, I don't like the Leafs. I'm a Raptor
make sense,
fan.
Though,
I'm not a Jays fan. I'm an Argos fan. Or I can't cheer for the Argos. I'm a TFC fan.
And I think you're right when it's the whole concept of if you build it, they will come. Because I mean, when the Marlies finally with Rico have a place to play and it's beautiful and people it develops. Same thing with smaller arenas like in Barrie or in Oshawa. Whenever they built a better place for people to come and enjoy the game, they start to do that. They feel more comfortable, and you do see that connection. And then, again, a few years after that, you start to feel that tradition. And like you said, it doesn't have to be the first and most penultimate performance, but there it's enough for them to get a feel for it.
And I know we've got to go here, but the other thing that drives me insane is when I listen to people who will watch the NCAA and say it's a superior product to the CFL. It's not. Mm-hmm. Full stop. These are men. The other ones are boys. Full stop.
Yeah.
I've talked to guys. I try to do this every year with a new guy who comes up here from a major NCAA program. I haven't done it this year, but I'll ask them, okay, your team right now from the NCAA, pick major D1 school, plays the Argos, and I don't care if it's NFL or CFL rules. Pick whichever one works best. What's the score? And I usually hear the Argos will win by 35. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not close. One guy told me last year something I hadn't thought of, and he's from a decent school. He said, what has really bothered me about playing in the CFL, and he's doing this tongue-in-cheek, he said, I now have really lost the respect I had for the NCAA because I've watched so much film up here and playing up here. the NCAA is so slow compared to the CFL, it's kind of taken some of my enjoyment away from the NCAA. And this guy, you know, played 4 years in the NCAA.
Yeah.
Had a good run down there, comes up here, and just this game is so much faster and harder hitting than it is at the NCAA level, yet there are fans in this market who won't hear that at any for any reason at all. Mm-hmm. And as a football fan, first and foremost, that drives me insane, the lack of respect that this game gets in this market.
Yeah, no, it's annoying.
So that it is. Speaking of annoying, I think it's time for Sean, isn't it?
Pencil on me! Pencil on me!
Yes, indeed. We're at BMO. Uncle Sean is back with his Proline picks back at the ranch in Etobicoke. How warm is the studio right now?
It's a little humid.
It's beautiful here. Nice breeze off the lake.
That's good. That's good.
Shirt sleeves and everything. How'd you do yesterday, Shawnee?
Well, let's put it this way. I picked all winners.
That's good. Were you trying to?
Well, unfortunately, the point spread didn't really help me. So
you're not really. Yeah. You had the under in the Cleveland game.
Yeah.
What did they score? 1,000 runs last night.
Yeah, 14.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Better for the weekend, though.
Well,
go ahead.
I hope so. I'm going with point spread here. It's point spread Friday. 3 CFL games. Hoagie, you tell me if I'm close.
Okay.
Tonight, of course, the Blue Bombers facing the Argos. Argos, 4.5-point favorites. I expect a very close game because the Bombers have been improving. I'm saying they cover the 4.5, but the Argos will win the game. That in game number 19, I got Calgary on the road against Saskatchewan. Saskatchewan has been terrible this year. I am going with the visitor, 6 points. That pays that just is a winner. So I go in with Calgary on the road. Game number 20, Hamilton against British Columbia. The Lions, 3-point favorites. But remember, Zach Caleros is back. For the Tiger Cats, I'm taking the Tiger Cats. So $20 wins you $100. Am I close, Hoagie?
It sounds good to me, Shawnee.
Good.
Sounds good to me.
You can get way into the game with Proline. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Proline.
/321, this is the Richard Show, 1-4 here on TSN 1050. I'm Mike Hogan along with Jeremy Taggart holding the fort. Live from BMO, where the Argos play the Winnipeg Blue Bombers tonight. We'll have the game for you starting online at 7:30 on TSN 1050. We'll have Canada versus France quarterfinals, Olympic women's soccer. We'll have the game online and then join this game in progress as soon as that game is over. And I guess it's appropriate for our next guest on, who played for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers sort of in the middle of his NFL career and won a Grey Cup back in 88 with these Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Sean Salisbury from ESPN on the line. How you doing, Sean?
I'm doing good, fellas. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Pleasure's mine. When I say 1988 Grey Cup, what do you think of?
Incredible memories. Some of the best teammates I ever had at any stage in my 10-year NFL career. Mike Riley, one of the finest men. Cal Murphy was a great businessman. Mike Riley, great football coach. I was blessed to be on, and it's not just talk because I'm on in Canada. My teammates, we just had a good time, and then just how it came together, guys. We didn't have the best record, and we kind of rolled through and played in every different kind of weather possible in the postseason, and ended up winning the Grey Cup, and to be a part of that, and to get there and start pretty quickly, and just to watch it grow. And anytime, I don't care what anybody tells you, any championship you're on at any level is a great feeling. And the way the people in Winnipeg and Canada have treated me, and especially our team, it was a special moment in my career, one that I cherish and one I'll never forget.
Sean, I'm curious because you're interesting because you came up here, you played pro ball, then you came up here to play pro, and then you went back and played pro down there. We always talk about the transfer of skills and trying to learn the Canadian game for Americans who had never, you know, seen three down football or a big field like this before they got up here. Did you learn anything up here that you were able to take back to the States, and maybe that skill that you learned up here was able to be translated back into four down ball?
Yeah, for me, and I took it very serious. You know, some guys come up there and think that you're going to the CFL, it's minor league football. And that's not true at all. There were some great players. I was blessed to play with Chris Walby, who was about as good as offensive lineman that there's ever been there. And, you know, from Bob Cameron as a punter, I played with some really good players. And I think for me what it learned was how fast we played fast. And I think that for, while it's a bigger field, heck, you could throw a go route from the 15-yard line, which was kind of awesome. Yeah. Is it how efficient you needed to be on three downs?
Yeah.
It was, you know, you look at the Arena League that you know, what Kurt Warner played in, that for them is how quickly the ball had to come out of your hand. For me, it was the extra player, so you had to learn coverage different by playing with 12 dudes instead of 11, which I'd never done before. And then the ability to make sure that you were efficient, that it just wasn't a big play league, that you still had to be efficient on two downs with three downs to go. Your first two downs, you had to make something happen. So I learned how to be more efficient, and I was fortunate that a lot of the time there that Mike Riley allowed me to call my own plays. So I'd played a little bit in the NFL, and I had the interest in study and preparation to be able to understand the rhythm of a play caller and to be able to do it yourself, not just audibilizing the line of scrimmage, but actually go into the huddle and call your own plays. I was blessed to be able to do a lot of that. It helped my career and helped me when I came back to the NFL for the next, 8 years or so. So, yeah, I learned a lot. While I was able to have fortunate a couple good seasons there and the Grey Cup year, I gained more from the CFL than they gained from me, I can tell you that.
Talking to Sean Salisbury, TSN 1050 NFL analyst. You did mention that, like, some people do see it, and it does have a bit of a stigma, the CFL, with saying, you know, things like minor leagues or players. But Hoagie and I were talking earlier, some players that come up here thinking of that, and there is a huge transition that they have to make, and probably maybe more so than not, they have an issue adapting to this style, and it's almost overcomes them a little bit, correct?
No question about it. And I'll tell you, when I first got there, and for me too, I didn't take it for granted. I wasn't one of those guys who brought an ego to it, saying, hey, you know, I'm better than these guys. I spent 2 years in the NFL. In fact, former first-round pick Perry Tuttle was part of our team. Guys, you know, there were some, you know, from the guys who even had been in CFL, Tracy Ham was there, and Matt Dunnigan, who's obviously a long time. There were some great players in that league, so I never took it for granted. For me, I remember the first time I got out of the huddle in practice and came to the line of scrimmage, and all of a sudden two slot guys are running towards the line of scrimmage. I stopped in the middle of the cadence. And thought, wait, you know, even though I'd watched it on TV, it's weird.
Yeah.
You know, because normally we can move sideways in the NFL, but once the line of scrimmage, I said, well, isn't that a penalty? Yet I knew it wasn't a penalty, but that's just the human nature. I stopped down, and I had to get used to that. But I love the fast pace of it. And for me, the advantage was, while I wasn't a scrambler by any stretch of the imagination, couldn't do the things that a Damon Allen or a Tracy Hammer Matt could do, but I had a big arm, and I was a student of the game and studied it. So football IQ was pretty natural for me. So I made an extra point of study and not taking it for granted. But because of the bigger field, it favored me because I was able to make all the throws and probably was able to make some of the throws that some other quarterbacks couldn't because of the arm strength, and that they could do some of the things that I couldn't do. So I tried to do the best I could adapt. And how I got my job, and God rest his soul, as he passed away recently and was a dear friend of Tom Mickey, who had the job, and we were in warm-ups before a game, and his bursa sack and his elbow bursts.
Oh,
I was a back. I'd been there like 3 weeks or 2 weeks, and we were in pregame warm-up. Tom was as classy and as good a man as I've ever been around as a player. And we go to the locker room after pregame warm-up, and we're minutes away from the game. He's on the training table in the room, and his elbow is the size of a grapefruit. And he looks at me, and his face was flush white, and I said, "Bud, are you all right?" And the bursa sack and his elbow broke, and Mike Riley walked up to me and said, "Sean, you're going to have to start." And for me, it wasn't going to have to start. It was a bummer how I got the job, but it was, I said, no, not have to start. I get to start is how I felt. But it was terrible because this was one of my, at that point, probably my best friend on the team in Tom Mickey. And for him to go out like that and to get that start, and I'll never forget it. We won the football game, and I started the rest of the season, but it was an odd way to get a job from one of the classiest guys and really good football player. But There was a lot of firsts for me in the CFL, but the Grey Cup, the capper, was winning a Grey Cup and being a part of that. The respect I have for that country and for that football league is nothing short of phenomenal, trust me.
Beautiful. And just in case Matt Dunnigan's driving into the studio stuck in traffic, I'm sorry I brought up the 1988 Grey Cup, Matty.
well, fortunately for us, Matty, the ball got tipped and we got the single point mattered, and we were fortunate to get a tip. Let me tell you something. You want the standard. There's been a lot of great ones. I mean, I played with Marcus Allen, Damon's brother, and I've known Damon since we were in high school. And there's so many great ones. I'm going to tell you something now. As tough as you guys, I'm not telling you guys anything you don't know, but his name and his reputation preceded him before I got to the CFL. And you could tell Matty, and you could tell Matty, I am grateful for that one point of the tip ball.
Yeah.
Nice. That had 8 million yards and plenty of championships. I needed one, so he was a special player, and the standard was set high for guys. He set the standard. Warren Moon, him, you know, the Doug Flutie's, and Matt was one of those guys. So I'm grateful we got away with one in that one, and it was a fun game, and I was able to beat what I consider one of the great quarterbacks in CFL history there, and I'm grateful it was us. So I'm not apologizing to Matt. I'll take that victory any way we can get it.
Oh, I bet. Sean, we have hit the wall here as far as the clock goes. We have so much to talk about in the NFL, but thanks for going down memory lane a little bit. That was fun, and we'll do the NFL thing next week, I promise.
I'm here for you guys anytime. I didn't even know we were going to do this, and I love it. I'm glad we did. I appreciate you guys.
Awesome. Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it.
Nice. Thanks, guys. Okay.
Sean Salisbury joining us from ESPN. I was working in Ottawa at the time. That's where the Grey Cup was that year, and it was as cold can be during the week. On Sunday, it was like a spring day. It was it went from like minus 30 to plus whatever, plus 2 or 3, and it felt like it was 50 degrees. Like it was fantastic. When we come back, we'll go from one USC product to another. Jim Barker will join us, the general manager of the Argos, as we continue with the Richard Show here on TSN 1050. This is Richard's 1-4. Mike's off this and next week. Mike Hogan and Jeremy Tanger keeping you company from BMO, where tonight the Toronto Argonauts take on the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, who seem to have turned a corner, which makes tonight's game extremely interesting and probably a little less restful night for our next guest, the general manager of the Argonauts, Jim Barker. How you doing, Jim?
Good, Hoagie. How are you?
Good. We just had a chat with Sean Salisbury, so we're getting this USC thing going here.
Wow. Wow, that you are. Fight on.
let me ask you about BMO and the quest to establish home field. I know the easy answer is wins. It's going to take wins. But to establish this as a difficult place to play, aside from the wins, what's it going to take?
Well, you know, getting the crowds to where, you know, the last game against Montreal was excellent in comparison to the Ottawa game. And, yeah, you know, there's so many things that factor into our attendance, it seems, more than at other places. But, you know, getting our crowd there and getting them involved, and there was a true home field advantage for us against Montreal. There was no doubt about that. And, you know, and then capitalizing on it. We had a great home field advantage against Hamilton and didn't play well. And, you know, that's not good. So we need to play well, and again, we need to get the crowds there, and then when they're there, you know, excite them with our play.
We'll lead into Logan Kilgore in a couple of seconds with this question, but can you give us an update on Ricky Ray's health?
Oh, he's coming along real well. He's moving good. You know, we have him on the 6-game injured list. I honestly don't believe he'll necessarily be on that for the full 6 games. I think he's coming along very well. So we put him on that until he can, you know, show that he can practice and things. So, you know, he's coming along well, and we'll wait and see. There's still a little tender when he pushes off and things like that, but it's nowhere near as bad as the one he had 2 years ago, the same kind of injury.
I know you had no doubt at all. I know Scott Milanovic had no doubt. I had no Marcus Brady, the coaching staff, the teammates had no doubt in Logan Kilgore. But fans hadn't seen very much of him, so there was always that doubt. What did you think of his performance in Ottawa?
I thought it was typical of a guy playing his first game. He was very shaky in the first half and a little tentative, and as he got comfortable, I think the last drive before halftime, when he completed a couple of balls, moved us down for a field goal, and then Lara making the field goal, I think that all gave him some momentum going the second half. The second half, he played like an experienced vet. He stepped up in the pocket. He made the throws he had to make, and you know, it was just what was most impressive. Again, the one thing you really look for is poise, and he wasn't panicky. He didn't panic in the pocket. He was He was very poised, and that's the biggest thing you look for. So we're hoping tonight he comes out, and again, he's playing a defense that the last 2 weeks has been as good as any in the league, and has created turnovers and given their team a lot of opportunities, and they've taken advantage of them. So this is a great test for him.
Talking to Jim Barker, Argos GM, we're watching the field get set up here. It's looking spectacular. How are you guys feeling settling in now that this is your new home? I mean, it's such a beautiful place. It's a great day, but just to have the team kind of have a few games now under their belt, how's it feeling to have BMO Field call home?
Well, it's great. I think it's as great a CFL stadium as there is in the league. And like I said earlier with Mike, as soon as we can get to where it's filled every week and there's people need to get their tickets in advance in order to be able to go to the game, and their sellouts, then it will be as good as any in the league. It'll give us the true home field advantage. I know our players love playing on the grass. That's been a huge thing for them. It doesn't tear their legs up like turf does. And I think the opposing teams enjoy coming in here, but it's such a great venue to watch a game. And for all the fans that are there, they're tremendous sight lines. And so, like I say, we just have to keep building. The last game against Montreal was a great crowd, and they were very enthusiastic and loud and really gave us a home field advantage. So hopefully we can just continue that.
Jim, it's a good thing you stocked up on receivers. Last year, you had the big three that turned a lot of eyes around the league. Torrey Gurley came into the league. Vidal Hazelin came into the league. Kevin Elliott came into the league. You had Chad Owens here already, and all of a sudden, Chads and Hamilton and the big three are all on the injured list. Yet, it doesn't seem like you're missing a beat.
Well, one of the things we do is we really work harder at finding receivers, going back to our camp in Florida. And we've got a lot of the same guys here because learning the offense is really difficult. So by having guys who have been able to stick around and learn the system from the beginning, plugging them into play is just a matter of, they get their opportunity, they go out and they perform. Devin Wiley has done outstanding. Deontay coming into the season was expected to be our starting W, and we expected him to be the leading receiver on our team. And when he got hurt, Kenny Shaw stepped in, and he had been with us for a full year on the practice roster. So, that's been good. Tonight, Brian Jones will get a chance to play some. Wallace Miles has stepped in again. We found him. He was with another team. We took him to Florida, and he showed that he can play. So, these guys are stepping in and doing their thing. We think Vidal's injury, he should be back hopefully next week at the worst, the 31st. Kevin Elliott will be back next week. So once we get these guys back, these injuries early in the season, all they're doing is creating depth for us and creating a situation that when we get into a key game down the stretch in the last six games, we'll have a guy who's played meaningful snaps for us, whether it's Wiley or Wallace Miles or, somebody who is maybe not in that original starting group. So I'm proud of these guys, the way they've stepped in and played, and that's what we expect. And they've done a great job. Taylor Stubblefield's done a great job coaching them and bringing them along. And like I say, we just expect the next guy to be able to step in and play.
It's interesting because of the body types involved, because you have Hazelton who's tall, you get Elliott who's taller, and then you get Gurley who's huge, and they're being replaced tonight by Deontay Spencer, 5'8". You've got Devin Wiley, 5'9". Yeah. Anthony Coombs, 5'9". Kenny Shaw listed at 6 foot. That might be generous. Does that change anything at all for a quarterback in the offense, just because you have smaller guys who maybe have a little tougher time blocking some of the bigger guys?
Well, I think it changes slightly. I mean, we went from Land of the Giants to the Land of the Smurfs. And I think it changes a little in your game planning. I think, getting guys the ball, these little guys the ball in the open field, and letting them do things after the catch, you know, you do a little bit more of that because they're very quick. They're all returners. Devin Wiley was a returner. Deontay's a returner. Kenny Shaw's a returner. Coombs is a returner. Dury at one point in his career was a returner. So we've still got those. We've got those with those kind of guys. You want to get the ball in their hands and let them do something with it. And, you know, so it might change the way you game plan and the way you set up your attack. But other than that, it's our system is what our system is. And, you know, with Logan, everything is geared more toward his strengths and the things that he can do well. And so I don't know how much change took place. And but it'll be an interesting game to watch because we are our receiving core is so large. And now they're so small. It's a good issue in that we're, like I say, we have a lot of different types of players that our coaches can choose from when we get down the stretch in these extremely meaningful games.
Well, you're going in the right direction, certainly. So is Winnipeg right now. Makes for a dandy tonight, 7:30 kickoff at BMO. Jim, we'll see you down here when you get down.
Very good. Thanks, Hoagie.
Thanks, Jim. Jim Barker, manager of the Toronto Argonauts. We will step away. We'll come back and to get you ready for Overdrive here on TSN 1050. .348 moments away from 4 o'clock. Boys from Overdrive going into the hot studio while we're here enjoying this beautiful breeze off the lake. Perfect night for football right now, although maybe
food trucks are all rolling in there. Might grab ourselves a poutine, eh?
That might be the most Canadian thing I've ever heard. And you've got the Kenora dinner jacket on.
Yeah,
today,
I do.
Too,
so. For sure I do.
So that works out big time.
I'm psyched.
Here's a nice quote. In case you're just tuning in, the Americans lost in soccer today in penalty kicks to the Americans when Hope Solo, the American goalie.
She's such a villain.
Choked. Right? She's terrible. She didn't stop enough of the penalty kicks.
Sure, yeah.
Her, we'll put it all on her.
Just
because we can. And this is one of the reasons why.
Even though they had the best pass that the Americans got was off of the Swedish player's face.
Here's the quote from Hope Solo after the game. "We lost to a bunch of cowards. The better team did not win."
What a sore winner.
Nah, loser.
Yeah.
Loser.
What a meanie.
That's brutal. I hope she doesn't go and start beating people up. That seems to be the M.O. Maybe that's why she changed gloves before the last kicker. They put the boxing gloves on.
Yeah.
Get ready for the scrap
afterwards.
Watch out,
afterwards. Downtown Rio.
Yeah. So I don't know. Other than in the United States, I don't know how many people are upset that the Americans lost. Probably, let me try to count on both hands. None.
None. Zero.
On one hand, I will not criticize her because in the media, we always complain when somebody says what's on their mind or doesn't say what's on their mind, and they come up with a cliche answer. So I'll give Hope Solo credit for coming out and saying, hey, we were the better team. They won. They shouldn't have. We were the better team, blah, blah, blah. Give her credit for that, for coming out and not.
But that tells you
a lot about the way Hope Solo thinks.
Yeah. Give her credit for her weird math in her head that somehow has her win the game, even though they lost.
Yeah, and she is getting eviscerated right now on the Twitter machine.
Oh, Twitter, it's on fire.
Yeah,
I saw something, A-Rod, and was it Derek Taylor tweeted that A-Rod and Hope Solo should get married?
Oh, nice.
Good couple.
That would be a happy baby.
Yeah, that would be a reality show that would be on the chats.
Hell of an athlete, though. It is interesting, though. I put in Hope Solo in the search engine on Twitter, and all of a sudden, like a minute later, there's 200 new results.
Yeah,
she's blowing up.
It is right now. Yeah, if you look at Twitter, everything has to do with Canadian winning stuff, Canadians, and Hope Solo being mean.
There we go. That's gonna do it. Enjoy the game tonight.
Yes.
We got soccer at 6. We've got the boys from Overdrive next, and we've got Argo football from here at BMO. But right now we have traffic. Here's Tiffany.